Here it is, another Saturday in CCO land, the final one of the year, as a matter of fact. Happy New Year from all of us here at CCO Radio, and I'm sure Ted Farrell was going to have another Happy New Year himself with all the good folks at Haskell's. Morning, Ted.
Good morning, Denny. How are you on this fine but chilly day?
I'm doing really great. 42 today, Ted, will be the warmth, and then maybe 4 to 7 inches of snow tomorrow. Wow.
There's something wrong with Minnesota's thermostat, but yeah, I guess on certain days you'll take it, and certain days you'll leave it, so you get what you get.
Well, maybe this is the day a lot of folks are going to be hearing the forecast and heading out to Haskell's and grocery stores alike to get all prepared for their next few meals. But what are we going to be talking about today, Ted?
Well, I like the way you think, Denny, and you know, we're talking about that, and I thought since this is the last talk that we'll have for 2025 and the New Year's is coming up, we talk all about sparkling wines, and sparkling wines are such a treat. You know, so many sparkling wine producers will try to convince you that it isn't just a New Year's kind of drink or just a birthday drink. You should be drinking it all the time, and I do agree with them. I haven't been bitten by the champagne bug the way some have to have that aha moment. I truly appreciate a terrific little sparkling wine on certain occasions, but even sometimes it's a Sunday, you have some friends coming over, you're going to watch the ball game, and you crack open a bottle of champagne or a bottle of sparkling wine. And there is a little twist on that. So many people just look at sparkling wine and say, we opened the champagne today. Well, that's not the case. You know, as they say, all champagnes are sparkling wines, but not all sparkling wines are champagne. And with that, it's all about the method in which they come and where it comes from. So the method in which they're made, and then also the places that they come from. And now there's several different methods of making sparkling wine. And the one I would tell our listeners to avoid the most is the one they call the soda pop method. And with that is they just get a wine that is, you know, maybe a subpar wine, and then they charge it with CO2. Generally speaking, they don't have any, they won't put that on the label saying soda pop. That's just the method style they do it. You can really notice that generally by the price on your shelf. Usually it's about under $10. In some cases, it might even be cheaper. It's a very inexpensive way to make wine. And quite frankly, with the CO2 charging on there, it might increase the level of your hangover if you have a little bit too much of it. It's, you know, there's a reason why that's so inexpensive. But that style is called the soda pop method, which is, it has its purpose, it has its place, but I personally don't recommend that. There's other options that are so much better and so much better to do. Now, there's other methods. The one that's probably the most widely used across most of the sparkling wine countries is the method they call Charmant. Now, Charmant is, you get your normal wine, it goes from grape juice into alcohols to normal still wine, and then in a large vat, you add the sugars and yeast to that particular wine, and then the combination with the alcohol creates the carbonic gas, and then they put it into the bottle. And that way is a nice controlled way. And the Charmant method, quite frankly, is a terrific way because you get a good sparkling wine experience, but it keeps the prices low. Generally, most of the champagnes or sparkling wines that are made in that method are generally under $20, but there's still some quality there because of that addition. They let it happen naturally, the sugars and yeast combining with that in that big vat, a wonderful wine. So you can see all kinds of wines that are made in that method, whether it's a Prosecco, whether it's just some sparkling wine, some Cava. You know, they're all around the world that way. Another method they call is ancestral, and that's where they go through the classic method of making it, which I'll explain in a second. But what they do is they don't disgorge it, which means they don't take the lees out. So sometimes on those particular bottles, you'll see some sediment floating around in the bottle of wine, and that adds a little bit of flavor. For some, though, that can kind of scare people away because you're pouring out a bottle of wine that has a little bit of murky in it, a little bit of sediment. Some people might say, well, you know, is this wine ready? Is this that? But that's the ancestral method. Now there's the method Champenois. the method that the champagne producers develop. So the first phase, obviously, like all these other phases, is you get grape juice that turns into wine. Well, then what you do is that you pour that wine into the bottle, and then you add the sugars and yeast inside that particular bottle. Then they over time, they combine, they seal it up. Generally, it's kind of funny because you see it, and they just seal it up oftentimes with the soda cap bottle, where you think this fancy wine should be done a little bit, but you see it all with soda caps on there. And then they'll sit, and what they do is they then save it and put it in the cellar. And in the olden days, they used to have this poor fella named the Riddler, not the Batman enemy Riddler, but the Riddler. This poor guy would have to go through and turn and stand up every little bottle by so much, thousands and thousands of bottles a day. He would turn it just a little bit, both his hands, all the way down the cave, turning and turning and turning. That's stirring up the yeast and sugars to combine with that. But it also eventually, he tilts the bottle ever so slightly, so eventually all those lees will fall down to the tip of the bottle. How that fella never got carpal tunnel is beyond me, because he would sit, and basically once he got done riddling thousands of bottles, he'd have to go back and start all over again. It was quite a process. The family that owned the Korbel company actually invented an automatic riddler, which is all these bottles and a big thing that looks like a pallet that they would slowly turn and adjust. And of course, originally the French all thought that they were mad doing that. You know, the riddler does a great job. Then they found out, well, guess what? It's a pretty good way to riddle the wines, and you don't have that poor guy getting carpal tunnel running up and down the hallways of their cellars or whatnot. But so eventually all that yeast and sediment then settles down into the neck of the bottle. And what they do is this is the disgorging process, which in some cases they even freeze it off, where they just get a little, nitrogen, and they freeze the tip of it, and so all that slush slides right out. Now, that does leave a little bit of gap in the wine, but they fill that up, and then they seal it all up, and then you're ready. That is the method Champenois. That is also they call it traditional method. Now, if you go through all those steps, you're very proud to put that on your label. Generally, champagne, that's what they put on there. The word champagne is just enough to say that that's how it's gone through. In other areas of France and other areas of the world, since they went through all that, they would put traditional method on there. Now, in France, because of they prize champagne so well, it's put up on such a pedestal that ever since, I think it was the World War I, they write it into all their treaties that nowhere else can they use the word champagne. It's special. So then if you make sparkling wine in other parts of France, you get things called Cremant Day. And the Cremant Day is the region in which it comes from. So one of our favorites is Cremant de Bourgogne, the Burgundy region, because they use Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, the two similar grapes to the grapes that they use up in Champagne. But there's also, Cremant de Bordeaux. There's also Cremant de Loire. There's Cremant de Rhone. There's Cremant de Jura. There's other areas in which they do that. So that is kind of how it's done in France, at least. Now, you do have other wines and things like that, like a Prosecco comes from the northeastern portion of Italy in the Veneto region, where they actually have migrated toward that champagne protective category, where they're realizing people were growing Prosecco grapes all around the world and calling things Prosecco, and they decided we need to protect it. So they actually changed the name of the grape varietal from Prosecco grape to Galera. Now they can protect their little area up there, and that's done in a Frizzante style. So if you kind of get real quick technical, champagnes and those Cremant de Bourgognes and things, those sparkling wines, are generally at four atmospheres, maybe even five, as far as pressurized, where a Frizzante wine or a Prosecco is at about two atmospheres. So it's a little bit softer. It's more of a fizz, per se, and that's what it does. And, so many things are credited to things like Dom Perignon. Everyone thinks Dom Perignon invented champagne, and that's not the case. Greek writers and Roman writers talked about how this crazy little elves and devils would sneak into the wine and create gas. It's been on for a long, long time. what Dom Perignon originally was tasked to do was to get rid of it. The Abbey guys were sick and tired of these bottles blowing up because the pressure was such that they said, hey, remove this from the wines. Well, what he did is he perfected the science as far as putting the right amount of sugar, the right amount of yeast to create that gas that wouldn't explode the bottle. So Dom Perignon is famous for that. And that kind of leads into what they call in the champagne levels, the different marks, where every year in Champagne, they make their wines and they call it in you got to do it. You got to make wine every year. And so that is called a non-vintage champagne. So they make those wines every year. So they won't put it when only the growing conditions are just ever so right. Then they'll put a vintage year on there the way they, you know, every other year in other wine regions, they have vintages, but only when the growing conditions are just so right that they'll put a vintage on that particular label. And inside that particular vintage year, they will kind of take all the best of the best and make what they call their grand mark. And the Moët and Chandon company, their grand mark is Dom Perignon, the best of the best. They still riddle that wine all the way down, but that's also why it's about $250 a bottle. There's other grand marks to look out for as well. You have Veuve Clicquot has La Grande Dame, named after Madame Postardin, who took over the company in the 1840s and ran it and made it the place it is. The Paul Roget company has Cuvée Winston Churchill, because Winston Churchill drank a bottle of their champagne every day. He was quoted as saying, in victory, I've earned it, in defeat, I need it. And so they named it after Winston because they helped make their little label quite famous. But their sparkling wines are bound to have with all your kind of meals. And, you know, it's always great with the holiday coming up, with New Year's coming up, to crack a bottle and have that served, whether it is right at the countdown or whether it is with dinner, because, you know, champagne does go so well with so many different things. Obviously, you know, like light oysters and some seafood, but also something salty, even something as basic as a potato chip. Sparkling wine goes quite well with, you know, and that's where you also see the decadence of a little caviar and champagne and things like that. But it's a wonderful way to get your New Year's started off.
Well, Ted, you're making me think back many years when there was a restaurant on 7th Street, and I think that's when Haskell's is right across the street pretty much. I was at dinner with some business dinner, and evidently the guy had a pretty good expense account because it was my first experience after drinking sparkling wine and cold duck, things like that. He ordered a bottle of Dom Perignon, and I went, holy mackerel. What have I been missing? That was the contrast was unbelievable. So I guess if you ever have a chance to celebrate, and those that you mentioned, those higher end, there really is a difference, isn't there?
There truly is. And, you know, so many people will scratch your head this way, well, it's price. But it, like you said, if you size those up, and granted, there's a contrast like no one's ever said, if you're used to cold duck and you go up to Dom Perignon, you're just going to, your socks will get blown right off with the amount of difference, the amount of character, the amount of richness that you'll try in those champagnes.
Oh, boy.
A truly, truly elegant wine.
I got to try that again. All right, Ted. Well, folks that want to check out all the good ideas that you always have on these Saturday shows, tell us where we can find Haskell's.
Thanks, Denny. Well, you know, we'll get you all ready and raring for the New Year's to ring it all in. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking on the weekends. We have a Haskell's in the Ridgedale area right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center in Minnetonka. We have a Haskell's in Highland right off of Ford Parkway. There's a Haskell's in Bloomington and Lomans Plaza. There's a Haskell's right in downtown Excelsior. We have a Haskell's in White Bear Lake, Stillwater. If you're down south, right off of 35, there's a Haskell's in Faribault. We have a Haskell's right up in Plymouth, and stop by our Haskell's Superstellar. It's a sight to be seen, 20,000 square feet of all kinds of sparkling needs that will take care of your holiday needs. Also, if you can't handle any of that, please stop by Haskell's.com 24/7, place that order. We'll even deliver it to you. And we would just like to wish all the listeners a very, very happy New Year.
And back at you, Ted, to you and all the good folks at Haskell's. We'll talk to you in the new year.
I look forward to that, Dan.
Thanks so much, Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Now get those lawn and garden.